Peace, love, and light, everybody. We are back, Minds Like Minds podcast, and I'm your host, RL Malpica.
And I'm Chef Definition, the co-host.
Yeah, we got a very special guest with us, author and legacy coach, Marie Alessi. How are you doing, Marie?
I'm doing great. Awesome to be here. Thank you.
Yeah, we're excited to have you. so much to get into with you and to share your story and whatnot. But first and foremost, you know, how's your day been going? That's what's really important.
It's been going really great. I already had one interview this morning, so I was super excited to double whammy this today. And I was really looking forward to being here.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. What part of the world do you live in?
In Sydney, Australia.
Okay. Okay. All right. What time is it over there? It's the evening over here.
It is 11 o'clock.
Wow. In the okay. Okay.
Yeah. 11 o'clock in the morning?
Yes. And already the 13th of October. So I'm a day ahead of you.
Oh, wow. Okay. So this is actually like a futuristic podcast then. Like we're talking.
The future's looking so bright. I can tell you that. It's amazing.
That's beautiful, right?
Yes. Well, that's awesome. Well, Marie, you know, we're excited to have you on because of number one, you know, what you're about, you know, loving life after loss, dealing with grief and losing a loved one is tough for anybody and everybody, I should say. And to kind of see what you've done and the movement that you've built is something we want to share with our listeners and our viewers. So we're super excited to get into all that with you.
Absolutely. Me too. Thank you so much. Yeah,
for sure. Absolutely. For sure. Everybody listening, either live on Twitch or watching live on Twitch or listening on any streaming platform when this comes out, the video version will be available on our streaming service, Akasha Flix. So make sure you check that out. But Marie, I want to start with you and just kind of have you tell our story. Like, how did we get to this point to where you've written a book about this and to where you have this actual movement? So kind of give us some background of how you got here.
I give you an absolute nutshell version and then you can ask me whatever you like to go into more detail. But the nutshell version is I had one very, very significant loss early on, which was when I was 20 and my dad passed away. And out of that, because in my movement, I talk a lot about the hidden gifts in adversity. And one of those gifts was to really live life to the fullest. I didn't handle my dad's passing very well. I handled my husband's passing very differently. So this was already the next giveaway. We were 45, happily married with two kids, when Rob very suddenly passed on a brain aneurysm on a business trip away. And that second really significant loss in my life, there are quite a few more, but these two were the most significant ones in my life, I handled very differently out of the learnings that I had from the first one, really, you know, to live life to the fullest, to really make sure that the focus stays on healing and on happiness. And Rob and I lived that very, very clearly. So when he passed, I knew what my North Star was, and that was happiness. And that's very unheard of in the space of grief. Most people think your life is over. This will always stay with you. You know, that will never leave you. And I'm here to change that. And I'm here to heal the world from grief. And I'm super excited to go into more detail with you guys.
Oof.
I'm ready. I'm
me too.
Okay. Were you going to say something?
No. You, this is all you, man.
Okay. So I don't even really know how to start. Suffering from loss myself, I lost my wife, and then shortly after that, I lost my oldest cousin, you know, and I really wanted to just get into it because I don't think I handled it so well, you know.
Yeah.
I was really extremely depressed for about 6 or 7 years. You know, 6 or 7 years, just completely going through the motions. I was cutting hair at the time, but I was just kind of like a robot, kind of like a machine. Yeah. I wasn't really, you know, I was suicidal. And it's funny that you say live life to the fullest.
Yeah.
I can I can like, it kind of like ding, ding, ding. I can kind of relate to it now. Like,
yeah,
going with the 10-year anniversary of my wife passing, right? Mm. But now it kind of clicks, like, oh, I live life to the fullest. But it didn't click then.
Yeah, of course.
What really kept me on the right path was I had to continue raising our children. So I didn't, that's one reason I didn't want to commit suicide, and I didn't want my mother to read about me in a dishonorable way of passing, or my children finding me and then even messing up their life or creating even more chaos. So with the grieving thing and the mourning thing, because life goes on and it moves at such a rapid rate, I never felt that I really had the length of whatever the length is, but a proper length of to grieve.
Yeah.
You dig what I'm saying? So
absolutely.
Over time, I got a better understanding of that. But after it happened, I was extremely fucked up.
Yeah.
And it's no really pretty way to put it. And I was going through the motions. And I really latched on the fact that I have to raise our children. You know what I'm saying? I know probably, like, you know, I've said it before in podcasts before, hurt people. So to some, I may have come across as an asshole or brash or whatever have you.
Yeah.
But, you know, I can. The concept of life that I knew at that point, it was very, very dark, very bleak. So one of my biggest questions I had to you is, how do you turn the pain off? How do you turn it off?
First of all, the very first thing I want to say is my heart goes out to you, because I really, like, I feel the pain when you talk about it, and I want to really honor that and acknowledge that. Secondly, my first thought was like, oh my God, I wish you would have met me back then. You know, you could have spared 7 years of depression or of really that heartache. However, I do believe everybody has their own journey. You know, everybody has their own path to go through. The third thing I want to say, and that is really pivotal, I really want everybody to listen very closely to that, because I hear parents say that all the time, I had to carry on for my children. And this is where I always say, I want you to own this. You didn't have to, you chose to, even though it might be on a completely subconscious basis, you know, but there are so many parents out there who don't make it, who stay in bed, who slide into depression and don't make it out of bed, who just stay in a depression and don't look after their kids, who might go into drugs or alcohol or unfortunately even suicide. And you didn't. So I just want to say kudos to you for getting up and raising your children, because you didn't have to, you chose to, even though you might not have been consciously aware of it at the time, but you did choose to do that. And I want to thank you for that and congratulate for that, because this is just amazing. Not everybody has the strength to do that. And I'm quite sure of, by the way you've just shared that, you might not have felt that you had the strength, yet you did it. And that is really important. So these are really the most important things. And for me, when people say, well, how do you do that? How do you switch the pain off? Well, you don't. But how I did it was my focus went to happiness. And that's something that most people don't understand or didn't understand. And the thing is, I was very blessed that Rob and I had a couple of conversations that were triggered by Rob driving past a fatal accident where a young dad lost his life, which was super tragic. And that night we were in our bed and we talk about this, like, what would you do? You know, if something was to happen to me, what would you do? And both of us said to each other, I would want you to take the boys and create the happiest life possible. And I remember this conversation and we truly meant it. Of course, at the time we thought it was theory, but when it happened, it was like, that's what I need to do. So it was not a flick to switch solution, as you can so certainly relate to that shift. You know, it was nothing that I could just switch to and the next day I was happy, but it became my North Star. It became my lighthouse. It became my everything, my direction. So for me, I never thought about how can I switch the pain off. I only ever thought about how can I create the happiest life possible for the boys and I, because that's what I promised Rob. And I wanted to honor that. I wanted to honor it for the beautiful connection that we had, for the love that we had, for our boys, you know, that our boys are like the absolute outcome of our love and connection, our everything. And I wanted to honor them. I wanted to honor me, and my happiness and their happiness became my focus. So the more you focus on the positive, on the happiness, on the healing, on the hope, the less space you leave for the pain. The pain is still there, but people always go like, you know, how can you support me in that healing journey, in my grieving journey? And I always say, I don't support you in the grieving, because you don't need support for that. That happens anyway. You don't need help with pain. It happens anyway. You need help with healing. So I will support you on your healing journey, on where you want to be, where you want to go. I give you all the tools that I can think of that I have used personally to focus on the healing and go that direction. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Ooh. Yeah.
Yes.
And the more happiness you allow in, the less space there will be for the pain and for the hurt. Yeah.
Now, is like, for you, obviously you said, you know, with the second major loss in your life, you were in a completely different space than the first one.
Yeah, absolutely.
What did that process look like for you? Like, was it something that was instant, or did you like have to kind of get your wits about you and be like, okay, this has happened. Mm-hmm. Obviously it's, you know, devastating from a pain perspective, but now I have to do what I promised, you know, my husband. Mm-hmm. Like, what was...
So you're talking about processing the grief, or processing the, how did I get to dealing with it differently? The leading up to it, or the after the adversity?
No, the after the second, your husband's death.
Yeah. I think what led to it was what happened beforehand, you know, not only that, the way I dealt with my dad's passing was debilitating. I literally went into nothingness for an entire year. I had no idea how to deal with that. Society doesn't teach us how to handle grief, how to handle adversity. There is this, oh my God, your dad died. This is really tragic and that'll hurt forever. That's sort of the normal approach. And I don't believe in that anymore. Back then I did.
Right.
Back then I just thought, you know, this is what you got to deal with, or that's what I've been dealt with, and nobody else would understand my pain ever, because I was the only one in my circle of friends that had lost a parent, and I was so close to my dad, you know, so it hurt massively. And not that it didn't hurt with Rob, but what I learned from my dad's passing was to never leave anything unsaid. To live life to the fullest, to be there. And that was, in hindsight, I often thought, wow, this was my biggest gift from my dad for our marriage, that we never left anything unsaid or undone. You know, we lived life to the fullest. I cannot remember one day in the 13 years that I had with Rob where I didn't tell him that I loved him or how much he meant to me. And they were not empty, repetitive words. They were like every day I felt like I had to tell him. It was so important to me. And also, again, not from a space of, oh, my God, I could lose him, but from a space, I've got a cat visiting. She's staring at me through the glass, so it's so funny. but from the space, if I don't tell you, my heart's going to burst, you know, I'm overflowing with love. I have to tell you this. And, so... How I dealt with it was this whole journey leading up to it really led me onto a path of going into coaching. I became a mindset mentor, and I have been living and breathing and teaching mindset about 7+ years leading up to Rob's passing. So I feel that gave me a very fair advantage on how to actually address this. And there's always that one thing, and every coach in the world will be able to relate to that. It's one thing teaching it and the other thing actually living it. And I'm a huge believer in you need to live what you teach. And that was at first like a massive punch in the face. It's like, your mindset mentor, show us how you deal with that one. and it just knocked me off my feet. It really knocked me at first, yet it didn't take very long. It was just something that felt like, I can't put it in any other words. I feel like I've always been looked after, in particular after Rob's passing. I felt so guided. It's incredible.
Wow. Wow. Mm.
That's yeah, love it. High five.
For sure.
Right on.
For sure. For sure.
I can so relate to that. With my oldest cousin. He was like my mentor, you know, my first mentor.
Yeah.
My first hero who I always looked up to. And when he passed, I realized that he had been preparing me for this, for this
to happen. Diversity. Yeah. Yeah. It's incredible. There are such, I call them the hidden gifts in adversity when you have these hindsight moments where we're like, oh my God, you know, you look at all these little milestones where you're like, oh, this happened in preparation for that, you know, and they just keep coming and they have such epiphanies. And to me, they're really beautiful gifts that just, yeah, my heart is overflowing. I'm in so much love and gratitude looking at them. And often they come with lots of tears, but it's just incredible gifts.
For sure. For sure.
I just want to hug you. Just hug you through the screen.
Yeah. Mm. Your movement, what you're doing, yeah. Like kind of describe and give some details on what the movement actually entails. For anybody out, because look, the grief is something that we're all going to deal with at some point. We're going to lose loved ones in our lives. That's just the nature of humanity. It's the nature of the world. Talk about that movement and what it's about and how it can help people.
Yeah, it is very moving, actually. That's what I love, calling it a movement and not just a group, because it really is very active. And I always say there's so much love and support in this group. It really moves my heart, you know, to see that it's our movement, not mine. There's so many people who come to the party as in really holding space with me for other people. Everybody who's come to the healing really helps me hold space for others. And that is just so beautiful. I never ask anybody to do that. That just happened naturally. And it's just so incredible. I have three amazing, amazing moderators who help me hold space and moderate the group. And they're in different time zones, so it works really, really well. But how we got started was I was actually in a really abrupt and extreme point of my life where I had a nervous breakdown about a week after Rob's funeral. Mm-hmm. And I just, you know, it so often happens that, like, as Jeff said before, I went into functioning mode when Rob died. You know, I just went like tick, 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 tick. I just ticked all the boxes. What needs to happen next? The planning, the funeral. Well, first of all, the flying across the country to identify Rob's body and then coming home and planning the funeral and the celebration of life that we had thereafter. And about a week after, there was this, everything was done, you know, like the same week where we had Rob's funeral, I walked my little one down the aisle on my own to his first Holy Communion. It was tough, man. It was just really, I still remember that. It almost broke me having to walk down the aisle on my own in a small country town where everybody knew what happened, all eyes on us. My tears were just flowing down and I'd so tried to keep it together for him. So there was this whole holding on. And then everything was over and I collapsed. Like there are no words, like primal screaming, whacking kitchen cupboards, like completely falling apart. It was such an out-of-body experience that was really scary for me. So if it was that scary for me, you can only imagine what it did to my then 10 and 8-year-old sons. And they were upstairs, open plan, no door, so they got the full force of it. And then I sat with them and we talked and I decided there and then I need to go and see someone. I had looked after everybody else but me. I made sure that I held space for them and they had the school counselor and they had people looking after them. left, right, center, including myself. Obviously, I became the mama bear in shining armor, you know, like fully stepping into protector mode.
Right, right.
And yeah, and nothing and no one could get past me, you know. Roar. It was just really, really intense. And that was the moment where I'm like, I need to help myself. I need to do something. And the next day I called a lady that was recommended to me actually for some of my clients, because, you know, working in the coaching space, I did not deal with suicide, depression, all these things were way beyond me. I always referred them on to a counselor, and mm-hmm. this counselor was especially recommended to me. And I'm like, I'm going to call her for me. And I started working with Emily. And there was this really pivotal moment in her office. She was incredible. She was just so beautiful, an absolute blessing. And I talked to her about these expectations from society, how everybody expects me to fall apart and expects me to handle it this way, but that my focus was on happiness and on healing, and that I looked at grief very differently to most people. And she looked at me and she said, what does grief mean to you, Marie? Mm. She was so calm. And I looked at her and said, I don't know how to say this, but the first word that came up for me when you asked me that was empowerment. And that was so unexpected. I did not expect that to come up as an answer. Yet, you know, again, hidden gifts in adversity, I felt so much strength being poured into me when Rob died. It was almost like he left all his strength for me. And I have no idea how else I would have been able to walk through all of that. And being aware of that and feeling that so clearly was, again, such a gift. I was like, wow, I honestly did not expect empowerment. So I had to sit with it. And then we talked through it and I looked at her and I said, you know what? I think I need to write a book about this. And she said, I think so too. And so I did. A couple of weeks later, I started writing. And that was, yeah, probably 5-6 weeks after that moment in her office, I published the book. I just wow. couldn't believe it. It just went like flow writing, share my story straight from my heart. And I just shared how Rob and I met, how, you know, we had our dream barefoot wedding at the beach and the two boys and happy life, and then how he passed and how I dealt with it, because I felt sharing that with the world, maybe some people get some hope, some clues out of that, how you can deal with it differently.
For sure.
What I didn't expect, and this is how I finished my answer to your question in a very long-winded way, was that the book didn't only get to Amazon number one bestseller, but it ranked in the top 100 of Australia, and that was completely wow. unexpected.
That is awesome.
I was so blown away, and I still remember this beautiful moment when I saw the list. And there was my name next to Michelle Obama's. She had published her book, Becoming, which I, of course, read afterwards, and I'm blown away by it. But she was number 16, and I was number 61 on the top 100 list in Australia. And I was like, ooh, Michelle and I, you know, like
yes. we're
list buddies. And same That's numbers, beautiful. Just reversed. But yeah, so that was the catalyst of all of it. That's what planted a seed. And when I saw the impact my book had, I knew I had something that the world needed. I thought I need to do more with that. And I traveled around the world with the boys for 2 months. And we had this moment in Vienna where I sat and reminisced and thought, I need to do something with that. So that's how the movement came about. When I came back from our trip around the world, I started working with a mentor. And 3 weeks later, I opened the doors to the movement, Loving Life After Loss.
Wow. Wow. Mm. Loving Life After Loss, everybody, is available yeah. on Amazon. I will definitely have a link yeah. in the description. You guys need to definitely check that out. I need to check that out myself. Mm. That's amazing. I'm always in you. Awe of anyone who can write a book, because I know how difficult it is. Yeah. I'm trying to write a book, and it's a process. So for you to pump it out, and what'd you say, 5-6 weeks is absolutely amazing.
Oh, the actual writing process was about 15 hours, but it stretched over 4 weeks where I needed honestly, it was such a flow writing process, because yeah. it was my story. Truth. I literally just poured it out. And yeah, I know I could have really overthought it and worked through it and edited, but I just went straight from my heart and published it.
That's
and
awesome.
I was like, yeah.
That's awesome. Wow.
Thank you.
Yeah. That is awesome. I got a question for actually both of you. And this sure. came to me. And Chef, you can start it off with your answer. But, you know, when we talk about grief and you know, going through it and overcoming it and all those different things. We all, you know, for the most part, we talk about it from our own personal perspective. But for both of you, you guys had children that dealt with it as well. So, Chef, like, how did your children deal with it? What was your role in that, and how are they dealing with it currently?
I think, you know, of course they got canceled from school. We talk about it a little bit periodically. One thing I wanted to stress with my children I know it's a devastating change, but remain children for as long as you can. Keep your innocence intact. I never want to try to put my children in adult situations, or I want to I want to be the best dad I could be to my children. So I wanted to make sure that we had an open line of communication, and no matter how they may have felt, they could talk to me and just let me know how they were feeling about things. And I didn't want to fuck my kids up. So, no. I just kind of love them real hard. Protecting the shit.
May I ask how old your kids were when your wife died?
Like 10 and 8.
Wow.
Something like that. Because it was, everything like dates and ages, things like that, it became a blur.
Of course.
So, like I was saying, it's been 10 years. My son, he just turned 19. My daughter, she just turned 22. And my oldest daughter, 27. So, that's kind of like, I just allowed my children a path to grow. I supported their decision-making process.
Yeah.
Whatever it was, I reinforced. My son, he's playing football at a prep academy right now. I just want them to be kids.
Yeah. I can so relate to that. That is such a big thing. It's, you know, my boys were 10 and 8 when Rob died. Oh. And because obviously, you know, their dad passed and not their mom. So it's a bit of a different role reversal here in our situation. And me having two boys, Flynn, my older one, he, as I said, he was only 10. He really wanted to step in those shoes of I'm the eldest male in the family, and really started looking after me, and also sort of like not wanting to show his pain to protect me. And we had many, many chats about that. And I also, like, you know, from a coaching and parents perspective, that was always the hard thing for me, to find that balancing act, to not be too much of a coach and not let that get in the way of like just being the parent, because sometimes it's really hard not to overanalyze those situations. But I also had to honor that he now was the eldest male in the family, and that is a very different situation. Yet on the other hand, letting him be a child, as you said, this is so valuable. I'm so glad you mentioned that, because they do grow up so fast through adversity. It's ridiculous. Like, you see the difference in maturity at school, you know, when you look at other kids, and it is so beautiful on one hand because you're really proud of them, and heartbreaking on the other hand because you know what caused it. And to find that difference in the middle of a mended heart and just being proud of them and hold space for them, because it is part of their journey, you know, that is a real balancing act, and still is, you know. I've just I want to keep this super real here, because about 2.5 months ago my father-in-law passed away. So this is like the third father figure in my life that died now. You know, first my dad when I was 20, then Rob, my kid's dad, when I was 45. And now 2.5 months ago, my father-in-law. And this was the very first time in my life that I was actually witnessing somebody passing away. We were all there. The whole family came together and my sons were with me when their nono passed away. And I many times said to them, and here's the good thing about being bilingual, because I speak German to my boys, and so they didn't have to be confronted by their entire family as, you know, young male adults. I said to them in German a few times, if you want me to leave with you, we can go outside. You don't have to be here, you know. So my little one was falling apart. He was sobbing. My older one was standing there really strong. He's so much taller than me now. I could feel he just wanted to protect me, and I wanted to protect him. So we held the strength. My little one was crying. My father-in-law was dying. It was just so confronting and raw and extremely sacred, if that makes sense. I felt it was such a gift for us to be there, to be surrounded as love, to help hold space for him in his passing. And it triggered a lot for me. It brought up a lot of things that needed to be seen again, that still needed to be healed. And I literally yesterday made a phone call to a counselor, and I said, I have these levels of anxiety coming up. And I told her what I do, and I said, I'm always the helper. I need somebody to help me to work through that. And this is the only way how I can continue helping others, if I keep my healing going. And I noticed that I need more support. I saw a counselor for about 4 months after Rob died, and then I felt really great. And I kept seeing Reiki coaches and doing healing sessions. And I go to regular kahuna massages as a huge part of my healing journey.
Nice.
Yet I got to a point where I felt I need more. And I think it's really important for all of us, anyone listening to this, when you feel you've come to a step in your life, a phase in your life where you need more support, don't feel like, oh, I should be over this ever. If you feel it, act on it. I did too. And I'm really looking forward to seeing her next week and just sharing a few things about this anxiety that's coming up for me, because I need to keep that clean. I need to keep applying my own healing to myself so I can help others as well.
Yeah, I mean, that's one thing that I think I like to implore to everybody, is that we're all, like, healing doesn't stop. Like, we call it healing.
Such a beautiful journey.
Healing in process. Like, we're always healing. Yeah. We're always healing for something, because everything changes every single day. And it's okay. Yeah. It's okay to acknowledge that and feel it, you know, when, you know, don't suppress emotions. You know, a lot of us have childhood traumas that we've suppressed, and then, you know, wonder why they come out in the ways that they do, you know.
And adversity often triggers them, you know, the childhood traumas that haven't been healed. Yeah.
Right. Exactly. Exactly. So feel it, you know, let it out, let those emotions out, you know, to the fullest extent. And then, and then you can move on from it, you know. Suppressing it and acting like it doesn't exist is never going to be good for the long run.
No, definitely. Longevity of it.
For sure. How do you feel like with your approach and what you coach and what your movement is all about? How do you feel about the, I don't necessarily want to call it a myth, maybe it is a myth, but the whole five stages of grief? Do you go by that, or is your approach completely different? And for those who don't know the five stages, what is it? Denial, anger, bargaining, depression, and then acceptance. That's the five stages.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's the five stages for terminally ill people, not for grief. Somewhere along the lines that has been lost in translation, and Dr. Elizabeth Kubler-Ross, who's such a renowned author in the space of grief, has written about these five stages for terminally ill people in the anticipatory grief, not in the grief per se after somebody's passing. And it makes so much sense when you think about it, you know, the anger, the denial, the bargaining, it's got nothing to do with grief thereafter. It's the anticipatory grief for people who have found out that they are terminally ill. And I can't stress about that enough, because so many people that are experiencing grief, they try to press their to squeeze their healing, their grieving journey into those five stages. And also some people feel like, oh, once I tick that off, then I'm fine. There's no ticking off. They come in different orders, and they're not for the space of grief. They are for terminally ill people, and that makes so much sense when you think about it. So, yeah, it's something that really needs to be addressed more and more, that this is nothing to go by when it comes to grief. It's something, it for me, it's like society trying to put labels on something where there are no words for it, if that makes sense.
It does. Thanks a lot. Oh, and I'm glad you cleared that up, because... Because like most people who haven't dealt with it or anything, they might revert to, you know, Google or whatever the case may be.
And that's unfortunately the first thing they find, and it's just not true. It's just,
Right. Exactly. So, Wow. Just powerful stuff. So let's talk about the process of working with you. Because a lot of, you know, we've done, we haven't done a lot of episodes on grief, but we've done a lot on like, childhood traumas and overcoming traumas. Yeah. And, you know, with Chef on the show, we've talked about, his losses, you know, multiple times. And we have a lot of listeners that are currently dealing with grief or, have dealt with grief. So, what does that process look like, as far as if somebody wanted to reach out to you and kind of what that step-by-step aspect looks like?
Yeah, I always encourage people to just reach out to me for a brief chat. I keep them super brief, like literally 15 minutes, and you'd be amazed how much I can do in 15 minutes. It is literally just to assess the situation, get an idea of their story, and then pinpoint them in the right direction. And that's not always me. This healing journey is not about me. I know how to hold space for people, yet sometimes I really feel that other people are way better equipped to help and to help heal than I am. For example, when it comes to clinical depression or suicidal, I don't touch these topics because I'm not trained and equipped for it. I'm a coach. I'm really great at the work I do, and I'll say that without any ego coming in the way, because I see the success that the people have that I work with. I'm very, very happy. It's got nothing to do with pride. I'm super happy to say that I've got 100% healing rate. Like, the people that work with me walk out differently, and that is just something that is so beautiful. So the first thing I always address is just to stop the pain. And I literally have various healing journeys, and there's DIY stuff, there is online stuff with me, there is the in-person stuff with me, where I address people in different ways. But everything I do has got an underlying shifting your perspective, really stepping into the perspective that you look at healing. People always look at, I said that at the beginning of the talk here today, people always go like, how can you help me in my grieving journey? I said, I can't. I'm here to help you on your healing journey. Oh, and that's already in a nutshell what I do. I focus on how I can help them, because nobody needs help with the pain. The pain is there anyway. I keep saying that over and over again. It's really, really important. So in all of my healing journeys and programs, I teach people how to change their perspective on things. And I want to share one super quick example that just happened at the last retreat, where one of the ladies burst out into tears, and she said, I'm still angry at my husband for leaving me. And I just held her in so much love, because I could feel her pain. And funny enough, I've really befriended anger, because anger is just a cover-up emotion. It's a way to really, often in an explosive way, to get rid of the hurt, basically. What we need to do is learn how to address and express anger in a healthy way. But the most important thing is to look at what's underneath, what's sitting underneath the anger. That's the real emotion that needs to be addressed, because it re-triggers over and over and over that anger until we address the real emotion underneath. So in her case, I always ask beforehand, I said, do you mind if I offer you a reframe? Because it's really important for me to ask. Some people are not ready to hear it. And she said, absolutely. I said, the straightest way I can give you is, your husband didn't leave you. He died. And she just looked at me, and everything just went like, And it was really incredible. And we did a really powerful exercise afterwards that really manifested that. Mm-hmm. But for her, it was such a turnaround. And she ended up after this exercise, it was not just these words, after the exercise that we did, it's a beautiful fire ceremony that I do there. She said, oh my God, I've got a life to live, you know? And it was so beautiful that she went from almost like wanting to follow her husband to, I've got a life to live. It was a 100, oh, I've got goosebumps just thinking about it. It was a 180 degrees turnaround there and then, and it took an hour to work through that, you know. But see, that's a little shift. What changes is the intention. When you say, my husband left me, there's an intention behind that, and he didn't have that intention. But when you say my husband died, it's stating the facts. There's no intention of leaving anyone. It's just the fact that he died, and we all have an expiry date, and we just all don't know when that happens. So, yeah, and it made her aware of, okay, whenever my expiry date is, I want to make this life count. I want to live this life, and, oh, my God, my heart is full to the brim.
Yes, yes. And it's, you know, like you talked about mindset before, it's a mindset thing. Mm-hmm. It's an outlook. I mean, you can look at your life as every day I'm getting closer to death, or you can look at it as like every day I'm living more and more. You know what I mean? Like there's, that's a completely different mindset, and the energy around it is completely different.
Yeah. And the days you've got ahead of you are still the same number, you know?
Still the same. Exactly.
It doesn't
change
the number, but it changes the way you live your life. And I love that.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Yeah.
Now see, you wrote a second book, Happy Healing.
Yes.
Tell us about that.
Yeah, it was really such a beautiful story, actually, because when there's a lady, Pam Brossman, and she, that's one of her absolute number one things, you know, to help people write their story. And when she first heard about me wanting to share Rob and my story, she said, she took me under her wings. She said, I want to have you in my course. I'd love to help you. And she did, you know, with the whole process of how to write it and how to choose the chapters and with the cover and the title. She actually chose the title for me, Loving Love After Loss. And at first I thought, it's way too commercial. I don't like it. And now I'm looking at it going, like, how could I have ever named it something differently? You know, I wanted to call it Love Legacy or whatever. And now I'm like, no, this is so perfect because it's such a way of life. And it's also a call to action, and it's also a filter for those people who come into my movement, you know, that, you know, there's a reason why they come in. So I loved it, and I remember Pam was such a supporter of me. Like whenever she sees me somewhere on LinkedIn or on Facebook, she would comment or she would tag me when people talk about grief or not knowing how to move forward. And there was one tag that she did that she's like, I think you need to write another book, Happy Healing. And I'm like, oh my God, yes. And that's how it triggered, like just by her comment. I already knew I had to write another book, but instantly with her comment, I'm like, and that's the title, here it is. And it was just so beautiful. So the second book I did all on my own, and I just wanted to give the readers the, you know, how the story continued, and in particular what happened thereafter, you know, the creation of the movement. And I also wanted, in that very book, I wanted to give people something hands-on. So I've actually got the 7 steps of my healing journey from grief to relief in there. Okay. And I thought this is a really beautiful way for people to get started. And so I published a book. And I wanted to use a beautiful portal. When, if you remember the 2222, you know, we had the 2nd of February 2022, and I published it on that day.
Oh, beautiful.
And then 3 weeks later, on the 22nd of the 2nd, to finish off that beautiful portal, I did my first TEDx talk. So it was an unbelievable start to the year. Yeah.
Amazing. Amazing. And they can, people can see your TEDx talk on your YouTube page. Or is it?
Yeah, it's on YouTube. Yeah, it's called Redefining Our Image of a Widow.
Oh, wow.
Talk a lot about label and how we need to change that. Yeah.
Mm. Wow. And your retreats, you have healing retreats.
Yes.
And I know you talked about it a little bit in your recent explanation, but give us a little bit more detail on that, because I'm a huge fan of retreats. I just think they're so powerful. Yeah. I'd love to hear about it.
The retreats are really my absolute favorite thing to do, and I understand not everybody can come to it. At the moment, I only run them in Australia. I've been invited to do them in you know, in the US and in Canada already, yet my boys are at an age where I'm just not ready to do that. They're 12 and 14 now, so it's not ideal to either leave them or take them with me. Just doesn't work yet. So the retreats are 3.5 days. We all gather on the Thursday afternoon just for drinks and actually, I shouldn't say drinks because I keep the retreats alcohol free, but, you know, just to sit and eat and drink together to get to know each other and then start the retreat together on the Friday morning. So I made it mandatory now to arrive the night before so people can really settle in, arrive, get to know each other. And then the actual program runs Friday, Saturday and Sunday till about lunchtime. And the whole retreat, I have an itinerary. I have a framework for it. Yet I always let myself be guided by the people who come together. I work very, very intuitively. So whatever comes to the space, I deal with it there and then, and I just take the framework to help me through it. But yeah, I call it freestyle coaching these days because I've been in a coaching space for way over a decade now. So it feels quite intuitive to me what I do there at the retreat. Yet there are some really, really powerful tools and techniques that I want people to take away from. I want people to get something from the retreat that they can use on a daily basis. I don't want to create dependents that need me all the time to hold space for them. I want them to get the tools and learn how to use them. That's the most important part for me. So people can literally come to these 3.5 days and walk out completely transformed. I'm not, you know, trying to hype that up in any way, but they really do. It is so sacred. It is just beautiful. And there's one more quick thing I want to share.
Yeah, please.
At the last retreat that we did, there's a chakra meditation that I wrote for the retreat specifically.
Oh, okay.
And so we're going through all these colors of the chakras and we finished the chakra meditation and we walked outside and there was this massive, vibrant double rainbow over the full moon rising. And we all had goosebumps. We were like, oh my God, look at this. You know, this has never happened before. And it was one of the most vibrant rainbows I've ever seen. And it was such picture perfect timing. And I was like, I couldn't have ordered that at a better time, you know. Everybody, of course, thought it was their loved one looking after us. But it was just so, so incredibly beautiful. Yeah, there's always a lot of love and connection and huge transformation that happens at the retreat. It's just very sacred to me.
That is awesome. We have talked about doing a retreat out here in the States. Yeah. And it's just about doing it. You know, you can think about it, yeah. You can overanalyze it, you can, you know, yeah. Worry about how are we gonna come up with this, that, and the other.
Yeah.
No, we just need to do it and we will eventually.
Yeah.
But to hear about what you're doing over there, it's amazing. It truly is.
Truly,
yeah. I have to say, I never overthought anything. I just went and did it. And often I felt like, you know, when people said, how was it for you starting the movement? I would say, it felt like jumping off a cliff and growing my wings on the way down. And then I just remembered I actually already had them. So it was there was a lot of just intuitive. And as I said, that was one of the things after Rob died, I felt my path was literally just presented to me. Mm-hmm. There were huge signs and there was just, I just knew where I had to go. I've never felt such strong guidance ever before in my life. It was incredible and still is.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, let everybody know, number one, where they can find you, all your social media handles, websites,
yeah,
and all that good stuff.
Yeah.
No, I'm sorry. Let them know what is your social handles.
I thought let them know. I thought you let them know.
I'll do that too.
I love it. So I'm gonna keep it super simple, so you don't have to remember too much. Just go to MarieAlessi.com. That's my website, and you find all the links and all the, you know, about my programs, retreats, merchandise, books, whatever there is, you'll find it there. And you can also book a chat with me, literally to chat to me directly. And let's start it there. And I actually made it a little bit simpler because sometimes people don't know how to spell my name. I also purchased the lovinglifeafterloss.com It simply redirects. So you find me under each. It goes to the same website. Yeah.
That's awesome. And you have a podcast as well?
Yes. It's all called Loving Love After Loss to keep it all simple. Perfect. It's all branded. It's all very straightforward.
Awesome. Good deal. Well, good. This has been tremendous. You know, we'd love to have you on again in the future.
It would be my honor.
Yeah, because I know we're going to get a lot of a great response from this one, and questions will come, and and I'm sure you're going to write another book or something. So we got
to
have.
I already got the title, but I don't know when it's going to come. But the title came to me.
For sure. Awesome. Yeah. Well, do you have any last words you want to share with anybody?
Yes, I want you to just trust your intuition. Don't trust what society expects from you. Every grief journey, every healing journey is so different. Just trust what you need and act upon it.
Love it. Chef, you got any last words for us?
Nothing other than thank you.
Thank you.
Yes. Thank you very much. It's a topic that sometimes is tough to talk about. And unfortunately it's not talked about enough. Something that we all deal with, and it's something that's out there, and for what you're doing, the light that you're sharing, the gift that you have, that you're providing to the world, like, we can't thank you enough. And I know your followers and the people listening to this are going to say thank you as well. So we appreciate you coming on and being transparent. You know, because a lot of people don't like to talk about their own personal life, and you put it in book form, you put it in, public forum, whatever you can do to help other people. And that in itself is a beautiful thing. So we truly do appreciate you.
Thank you so much.
I appreciate you having me. And thank you, Chef, to you in particular, for being so open and sharing, because I know how confronting that is. I really appreciate you. Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you, man. Thank you, brother. All right, everybody. If you are listening to this on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or any other streaming service, make sure you check out the video version on Akasha Flix. That's www.akashaflix, where you can see all of Minds Like Minds podcasts in video format, as well as a plethora of other conscious content. So we have over 250 videos, new content that comes out every single Friday. So we are out of here. Y'all be good. Peace.